It's starting right now. Just press the record button right here.
Oh, okay.
And we'll pause it. Sometimes people actually quite often like to pause.
In case they're saying something.
Well, they want to say something off the side, not have it be part of it, right. You know, and they get back to it.
Right, okay.
So.
Okay.
I think that, I guess what I can talk about it,
usually people find it's easier to concretely just talk about themselves in a narrative, like, how did you start working here? Mm-hmm. And actually, some of this was very interesting. You had shared some of this with me at Brooklyn Pickle.
Yeah. I guess you have to really go back to my time when I was kind of completing, and then after I'd completed college, I was in St. Louis, Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really involved in the city of St. Louis because... because of the fact that I had not been interested when I'd come there in it, you know, it seemed like a place that was relatively unimpressive and compared to other places that I had lived, unattractive. And my time there went on, I started to really become fascinated with a place that people were working to essentially reinvent, that had seen better times, that had kind of fallen into hard times, yet people were working really hard to kind of creatively reinvent the city and do it from a kind of a grassroots perspective. So that gave me a whole new perspective on my interests, because on the one hand, I had always been someone very interested in issues of social justice and, you know, kind of inequality and things like that. On the other hand, like, I felt a certain kind of, like, repulsion towards, that's a strong word, but, you know, you get the picture that it was an aversion to traditional social service models or social work models, mainly because I felt like it was just kind of oftentimes addressing symptoms instead of, you know, problems ultimately. And then when I felt like there wasn't necessarily a whole lot of creativity involved in the process, you know. And so I really thought for a long time that I would, you know, kind of... do some that the arts and that, or you know, that things that ultimately were kind of not directly impacting communities, but that would bring, you know, nice. For me, it was like, all right, well, if I can get other people to engage in the things that will inspire them and make them better people, then I'm doing my part in helping rebuild. But I don't want to be another social worker, or, you know, whatever. But I started to, in my time in St. Louis, realize that maybe there was a combination of the two, you know, that this concept of creativity and idealism and interest in justice could actually all converge, you know. And I guess it's pretty funny because I started to do, at the time I was doing freelance writing on the side of my day job, and I started getting really involved in what I started calling world shakers, which I later learned in graduate school had a more coined term, which was social entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. But I was interested in people who were doing creative things with kind of abandoned space and like making them become resources for communities and full of life and things like that. And so I started really getting interested in people who were kind of working on the ground floor to revitalize neighborhoods in really interesting and creative ways. So
that was in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. People were doing that, and you were
yeah. And I befriended a guy who had bought an old abandoned storefront building in a really beat up neighborhood, and he had converted it into an art gallery and into an antique shop and into an art studio for kids, and they ran other kind of programming out of it. And I was like, man, this is just so cool, you know. And it was like, on one hand, a place where people who were like me were hanging out, you know, like, kind of, you know, idealistic young people who didn't want to, like, go and join, like, the corporate world, and on the other hand, weren't, you know, ready to, like, just go and become, like, I don't know, social workers, you know. It was like, so what's the meeting place there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I was finding a lot of other people that I guess I just kind of, like, related to, and a lot of them were artists, but a lot of them were just, like, kind of, like... It's an eclectic group, you know.
How did you meet? How did you first befriend that guy?
Well, I had a friend who started a magazine called What's Up Magazine, which was a street newspaper sold by, or street magazine sold by homeless vendors. And it was like an arts and culture magazine, but also had a lot of civic issues and urban issues. And it was through, and so through that I started meeting all these interesting people doing interesting things on the ground, and I was writing and editing for that. So I just started becoming really fascinated with people who were doing all this like kind of really cool stuff on the ground, and like I got really involved in a community-based radio station, but they did a lot of social service kind of, not, I shouldn't say social services, but just community-based programming through the radio station, and they did a lot of awareness-raising stuff. I also befriended a guy who had started a boxing gym and thrift store and junk shop in a really rough neighborhood, but so he was running boxing programs for kids, and then also like just going throughout the city and collecting all this amazing old furniture and, you know, like trinkets and signs. And so he was kind of running this semi-viable business and also, you know, training kids to box, and was living upstairs and was like, you know, the neighborhood organizer. And he was like this really cool African-American guy who had lived in the neighborhood. He and I became really good friends. And I did a ton of work with him just helping out. And I learned how to box from him and actually started boxing on the side. there's another guy who had been around for a long time, but he was kind of an entrepreneur and artist, and he turned an old hat factory into like one of the coolest museums I've ever seen. But through that, again, they did all kinds of interesting community programming, engaging kids in education and the arts, but then they also did like community restoration projects through it, and they ran all kinds of cool revitalization programming through this museum, and the museum is like one of the neatest places you'll ever see. Like, it's one of the biggest attractions in St. Louis. So it was like, you know, time taught me that that making life better for marginalized people, and that, you know, working towards equality doesn't have to be you know, a joyless process. And can be a creative process. So I think those are the things that really started to stimulate me initially. So then that prompted me to go into graduate school. I went to graduate school in Chicago, where I, you know, did a master's in urban and community development. I was a CURL fellow. And what I really realized is that there's this whole world out there that was really interesting to me, and that I wanted to better equip myself to be a part of it. So I went to grad school kind of thinking that, and I wanted a program and a degree that was really hands-on. And so CURL really was that. So
what, just to give students a little idea of what type of curriculum, what types of things you do in an urban community, urban and community development.
Well, what was interesting is that I looked at a lot of like urban planning, mm-hmm. and I was somewhat like unattracted to urban planning degrees because in those cases, you know, you looked at social conditions and everything else, but ultimately it was this kind of like sterile, like, not, I mean, you know, a degree of sterility, I guess, but it was like, you know, looking at like the physical, you know, footprint of a community and understanding how to better improve it so as to, you know, better serve the people therein. And like, you know, and then there's also some, there's a lot of like, the physical meets the social in planning, and so it's not like just this complete, like, you know, it's still art as much as it is science, but I just knew I wanted something that was really relational and really like about like how do I, you know, get involved with people. And so this program in Chicago was really unique because it had planning elements, and it had, you know, it talked about you know, politics, and it talked about economic development, but it really was just kind of like, you know, hands-on how to build community, you know, and so there's community organizing involved in it, and there's also, like, we use Chicago mainly as the kind of the case study, you know, but, like, we studied history, we studied anthropology, studied sociology, and then planning and business, and so it was, like, kind of looking at, and really, I mean, I'm just kind of a big picture, you know, thinker already, you know, I mean, that's just, you know, the way my mind works. So I really liked the idea that I was understanding the intersection of all these disciplines in real life. You know, that like you can silo them in academia, but in real life they all converge. And the more you can kind of understand how they fit together, the more you can actually do. You know, mm-hmm. rather than like being constrained to one, you know, like kind of way of thinking or discipline. So I had this great program, and we learned, you know, and I did some very specific things. Like, I studied a lot about urban education systems, and things like that. I studied a lot about urban agriculture. I studied a lot about
what, yeah. I mean, what is it? What do you mean by urban agriculture? To some people, that might mean like marijuana plants in windowsills.
Yeah.
High-rise apartments, you know.
Well, really, I guess it's broader than even just agriculture. It's green space development, but ecological restoration, you know, restoring parks and bits of land in urban areas to what was like their original habitat, say, 200 years ago. In doing so, you're kind of doing a lot of things that actually correlate to human health, but also it's just like, you know, kind of trying to keep ecosystems in balance and things like that. And then, like, the other thing is, like, when you talk about, like, food security, you know, a lot of low-income populations don't have access to high-quality vegetables and fruits and, you know, have really poor diets. Well, a lot of that has to do with access and exposure. And so there's, like, all kinds of programs going on throughout the country. And, you know, a little bit of a dearth of them here in Syracuse at this point, but, like, in Chicago, they have tons of rooftop gardens and empty lots that have turned into gardens and, you know, places where they're essentially kind of reinventing spaces into actual farms, you know, and like small farms, but that then produce, you know, agricultural products for urban dwellers who typically don't have access to them. So I studied a lot about that, and I really ended up going and doing some work for a really cool program that, did, they had an urban farm in the middle of the south side of Chicago where they trained formerly homeless residents to learn how to do organic gardening and farming, and then they would actually go and get jobs on some of the larger organic farms out in the hinterlands in Illinois. So it was kind of this cool workforce development program too. So that was like, you know, a big component of my work. I studied refugee and immigration issues as it relates to urban areas. We did a lot of stuff on economic development, specifically looking at economic inequality issues, especially along like racial lines and geographical, you know, kind of lines. And then started, you know, like a lot of the stuff was like looking at innovative ways of, you know, combating those things. And so it was perfect because it didn't really require me to focus too much. Like, you know, I wanted to understand how a community works, you know, comprehensively or holistically. And so it was perfect for that. So that was kind of my degree. And I got to a point where I was doing like a lot of projects on the side, either through research or through just out of interest, where, you know, I was like helping some guys, these like two guys from my age, like I befriended them, and they were running a nonprofit in the Cabrini Green housing projects in Chicago, where they were tutoring programs and soccer and other kind of enrichment activities with kids in the middle schools of Cabrini Green. So I started helping them out a lot, which was really fun and rewarding, but it was still like a couple days a week, you know. So I got to a point where I said, you know, I really, well, I mean, I guess waxing philosophical for a second about social entrepreneurship, kind of the premier voice of social entrepreneurship is someone who came to Lemoyne last year, Dr. Andy Cooper from the Ashoka Institute. He talks about how when they look to fund social entrepreneurs, they look for people who essentially are living a certain truth, who, you know, aren't just like working on something, but in fact have kind of fully invested themselves in some sort of, you know, kind of work. And so, for me, I was reaching this point where I was learning about all these great people doing all these great things, and I was kind of on the periphery of people who were really doing incredible things in communities. And to do so, that often required some sort of personal sacrifice or risk, but I also saw these people as being like just so, you know, just as what I wanted to do or be. So I just said, forget it, I have to start doing something more. And so I kind of, on a whim one day, like almost at the last minute, decided to apply to a volunteer corps for inner city Chicago. It led me to spending a year teaching and coaching in an inner city high school in Chicago. So I did that for a year, and you know, really just kind of thought I didn't think that was going to necessarily be that particular role would be my career, but that it at least kind of would lead me onto a larger career. I spent a year doing that, and I thought it was amazing, and it was really hard, hardest thing I'd ever done, but I learned, you know, it changed me in a lot of ways. And I know that's really vague, but specifically, you know, I think I started to understand poverty and racial disparities and other things in ways that were beyond academia now, you know, and I also started to kind of, like, dispel the myths that come with those things. So, like, I learned that, in fact, it is possible for me to effectively relate to, you know, severely marginalized African Americans. It is possible to me to relate to young teenage boys who are, in fact, in gangs and dealing drugs. And it is possible for me to actually, like, learn from them and for them to learn from me. And I guess inherently within that are all kinds of lessons to, you know, to get to that, to learn those things. But I don't know of how important that is to talk about, but I guess what I really learned about more than anything in that position was A, that relationships have to be at the forefront of everything that we do, you know, because, you know, I watched around me all kinds of great programs and, you know, ideas, you know, kind of rise up, but like if the people in them weren't really willing to commit themselves to the people that were part of the programs, then it didn't work. And I realized that I made a lot of progress with my kids, not because I was an especially good teacher at all, but just because I really cared about them and spent a lot of time with them. And I think that over time they really recognized that and then, you know, trusted me more. And, you know, so those kinds of upon reflection, those kinds of things were, you know, the real big takeaways. I also learned that other than, like, touching a few kids' lives and maybe helping a couple kids get into college and, you know, maybe keeping a couple kids from making some bad decisions, you know, I wasn't really ever in that role going to have some sort of dramatic impact on a community. You know, like, that it's so much more systematic, you know, and that so many of these people, and especially in my case, these kids were just starting at such a disadvantage, with so many things going against them that you know, if I really ever wanted to try to, like, make anything happen, I would have to go far beyond that, you know. Mm-hmm. So the whole story kind of had a funny, you know, blip on the radar when my dad invited me to come coach them at SU, and I decided to, you know, after a lot of really tough decision making, I decided to go do it.
That was the year after the teaching?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Essentially, that was in the spring of my year teaching, and I finished out the year, and then as soon as kids graduated, I moved to Syracuse. So that was 2005. And so I spent what would amount to a year and a half in Syracuse coaching at SU, but my introduction to this whole work came when I, within the first few weeks here in Syracuse, I met a Franciscan friar, Friar Tim Mulligan, who in fact at the time was running the Alibrandi Center at SU. And what's interesting is that the former
high school that I had been at in Chicago, it was all male, all African-American, low-income, but it was, in fact, a Franciscan high school. So this kind of Franciscan theme has serendipitously followed me over my journey. But I met Friar Tim, we became friends, we'd go out for beers every once in a while. And one day he invited me over to the friary here at Assumption to have dinner and to meet the other friars. And it was then that I met Father Canice. And he and I became friends, acquaintances that night, but we got along really well and seemed to have kind of some just common interests or common bond. And then at a time when I was really starting to wrestle with, you know, I was on this great path towards really figuring out what I wanted to do in Chicago. And then I was coaching, and really, as much as it was fun, I knew I was really doing it to do something like with my dad and enjoy my experience with him as much as, you know, but really what I wanted was to get back into this quest to become some sort of, I guess, what we'd now describe as like a social entrepreneur, you know. So I actually asked Canice to be my spiritual advisor not long after meeting him, and so he became my advisor, and I really didn't know what FCM was at the time. I didn't know what they did here. I just knew Canice, and he just seemed like this really kind of profound guy, and that I got along with and seemed to jive with. So eventually, you know, as we started to kind of go through my questions and, you know, inner turmoil, he kind of finally was like, well, what do you want to do? And I kind of described it. I was like, well, I'd like to really, you know, have like this really kind of profound impact on a community. I'd like to try to work to achieve systematic change and do that through providing kind of comprehensive programming and services that, you know, doesn't just address single issues, but kind of looks at issues as a whole. And, you know, and I want to, like I said, I really would like to model myself, if I ever could do it, I'd like to model myself after the old, like settlement houses in Chicago from the early 20th century, which really was my inspiration a lot. Or
Jane Addams
was the prime, obviously the prime example there. Yeah. But just where it's like this hub for like kind of revitalization, you know, but in every sense of the word, you know, they did stuff with the economy. They provided social services. They provided education. They provided advocacy. And more than anything else, what they provided was community. They brought people together and asked, you know, got people to work together and got people from the outside world, from the elite world, to come to the poor and the marginalized world and to actually, you know, not just help them, but, you know, hang out. And they had dinners and, you know, music and, you know, and it was a social thing as much as it was anything else. And so I was kind of like describing all of that to him, and it was like almost like his jaw was dropping as I was describing it. And he basically said, well, you know, it's pretty funny that you're saying all that because that's what I would like to see happen here. And he described to me that they had been operating this organization for about a decade now and that it was really doing a pretty good job of providing direct social services to people, but that, you know, it was, in his mind, time to start understanding how do we start reaching out to others to collaborate to really start affecting quality of life. And, you know, it was really with that charge that I, you know, over kind of a long period of several months, decided to come work here. And the concept was, hey, my this was the charge I was given when I got here. Basically, it was that. Bring people of goodwill together to collaborate to radically alter the quality of life on the north side. So it was pretty broad, you know. But that really, I guess, kind of represents the evolution up to the point where I started here.
Great. That sounds like a very broad charge.
Yeah.
How did you make sense of that charge?
Well, I guess first of all, you know, the first component is this bringing people of goodwill together.
Here in Syracuse, as is the case in so many cities, you know, people tend to, nonprofits tend to work in silos. Businesses and, you know, people who are in the private sector see themselves as separate from people who are in the nonprofit sector. You know, their work is seen as separate, you know, and their interests seen as separate. And then here, especially on the north side, people with different ethnic backgrounds are really, you know, kind of distant from one another too. And so, you know, kind of understanding all of that and just seeing that very clearly beforehand, you know, before I ever even had to get working, I knew that part of my job would just be building relationships. And what I really believed, and this was strongly influenced by my time at you know, Loyola Chicago and some, you know, and some other places, was that building relationships, you know, we had to build relationships in the neighborhood and get to know our neighbors and some of the other people who were stakeholders in the neighborhood, other social service organizations and things like that. But I think it was clear to me from the beginning that we equally had to get connected and build relationships with people who were outside of the neighborhood, who might have an interest in participating in the neighborhood and could bring resources to it and bring expertise and knowledge to it. And, you know, so, you know, going out and just learning from people about what the neighborhood was about, what its challenges were, what the complexion and the composition of it was, and then talking to people and understand what the larger assets and resources were across the city, you know, and building relationships with people in the universities, building relationships with people in government offices, etc.
How do you do that? How do you build a relationship? Do you just walk up to just call someone, or do you step by their house?
Well, you know, in terms of, you know, neighborhood, we did a lot of, like, networking. Like, we would, you know, like, go to the people we did already know and then ask who else we should know and get, you know, we get people to introduce us and go sit down with, and then find other people who are kind of public leaders who represent different constituencies, whether it's, you know, Ty Shaw, the realtor, who's a leader in the Vietnamese community, whether it's Alberta DiStefano, who's the director of NIDA, or whether it's Marietta Mancini, who's a TNT facilitator and really big in the Italian community. We would, you know, like, kind of go to them, knowing that they really represent a whole constituency of people, but build relationships with them, and then, you know, things just kind of happen from there. Also, Martin and I would just go around and walk the neighborhood a lot, and we'd just start chatting people up, and we'd go and try different restaurants and coffee shops and go into different stores, and then we would kind of, like, get to know the people who are already coming here for the food pantry or the health clinic or whatever. And, you know, I mean, it's just kind of an exercise of being social, I guess, you know? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, our belief was that, like, we would learn, you know, the paths would become clear as we started to just understand things and get to know people, and in a lot of ways that's been the case, you know. I mean, I think that there's a few very general statements we made in the beginning. You know, you talk about, so building relationships, I think, is ultimately the biggest thing we could do, and I think it's ultimately just a process of networking, you know, like, or either, you know, like, kind of subtly, like, just finding ways to meet people.
So would you call someone and say, hi, someone else mentioned that, Jim mentioned that you're an important person in the community, would you like to meet so I could...
In some cases, yeah. You know, if people say, oh, you really need to call Alberta DiStefano. Mm-hmm. Finally, one day, I picked up the phone and I said, Alberta, I'm Dominic, I'm new at FCM, I've heard a lot about you. She says, oh, I've been hearing about you. I said, can I just come and talk to you? Mm-hmm. You know, and a lot of it is just asking people what they do. Mm-hmm. And learning about their process and mm-hmm. learning about their mission. And so, you know, I think that's a really big part of it too, you know. And then, Let's see. But I guess what we also started trying to do, and this was really a nice, I mean, this is part of the reality too, is that we know that certain things, you know, certain themes represent community revitalization. So for instance, youth programming, it's a theme. Green space development is a theme. Job training or workforce development or business development, these are all themes that ultimately are going to be used to describe a part of a process of community revitalization. And so, you know, Martin and I both kind of having backgrounds, you know, having studied and experienced these kinds of programs and processes, like we knew that we could identify these as general concepts. And we also knew that, you know, we had some infrastructure here physically, you know, in the facilities that were really, you know, kind of just sitting here unused or underused. And so we also knew that, like, we had the opportunity to kind of call people into some programming, you know, opportunities through our facilities. But so what we really also started trying to do is just kind of get starting conversations with people around, like, well, what do we think we want to do around here? What could we do around here for youth programming? Or what can we do around here for, like, you know, why aren't there enough parks? Or why aren't there enough, you know, why are the sidewalks so bad? Or, you know, and so just using those kind of themes as rallying points too, you know, those kind of evolved into conversations, and conversations evolved into relationships, and relationships have evolved into projects. Mm-hmm. You know, but I guess the biggest thing I could say is that our approach was one in which we did not start with any kind of specific agenda or project in mind. Our approach was strictly relational and it was thematic. But we thought that, you know, we know that these types of things are gonna have to happen. But if we prescribe them without getting any input or building any coalitions, there's no way we can ever pull them off. And if we did pull them off. Even then, we might be pissing people off in the process because we were doing it kind of unilaterally. So,
great. Okay, just in the interest of time, uh-huh. About 32 minutes.
Okay.
And so, this is. I'd like to close with. So, accomplishments. What have you gotten done? I know I've seen them in print and things like that. But from, you know, what are some of the highlights for you? The things that mm-hmm. you've been able to accomplish here.
Well, we, the first really huge tangible accomplishment we had was to be given the funding to run a youth program. We did a 8-week-long, 5-day-a-week, 9 hours a day summer program for area middle school students, all low income. And we essentially were able to hire a really young, vibrant staff of really talented people, and we did arts and sports and culinary arts. We taught the kids how to run a restaurant, and did a ton of field trips, college immersions, and
how many students about?
52 to begin with, and then halfway through the program, the Syracuse City School District started their summer school program, mm-hmm. and so some of the kids were forced to bow out of the program, mm-hmm. unfortunately. But you know, I think that. But 52 was the initial enrollment. That was a really, really wonderful experience. I mean, I could go into a lot of detail about what made it wonderful, but in general, it was just a fantastic thing to see these kids because it wasn't just something that was keeping them busy. I mean, they were really, like, you could see these kids, like, losing their inhibitions, like doing things that they've maybe never done before. So that was really exciting to watch. We kind of started what we've called the collaboratory, which really was just a mechanism for us to kind of achieve our philosophy, you know, and the idea of the collaboratory is that you really get a group of stakeholders from within and without the community, you know, outside of the community, and bring them together to have discussions and initiate projects, you know, that kind of like benefit the larger neighborhood, the larger community, but also provide benefits to those involved. So some of the projects that really have, and essentially the youth program more or less came out of the collaboratory too, but
some of the more formal projects coming to the collaboratory were our Festival of Many Nations, which is a multicultural festival that was really intended to be both geographically available and affordable to neighborhood residents, as opposed to a lot of the larger festivals downtown, which are both geographically and financially prohibitive.
So when did that begin?
We started planning it in the spring of 07, and then we held it in September of 07.
So that was the first one?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a ball. Mm-hmm. And that'll be an annual thing now. We're already planning for it.
Were there local vendors at that? Or what was
you know what? Because we wanted to just keep it really cheap initially, we just made all the food ourselves.
Oh, right.
And we lost money on it, but we'd gotten underwritten by the Gifford Foundation. And, mm-hmm. But it was just kind of like, yeah, we made all the food ourselves and kept it really cheap. And then we had different kind of cultural performances from all kinds of different, music groups and stuff like that from different cultural backgrounds. And
how many people were?
About 500.
Okay, well,
yeah, it was really wild. It was a blast. And we had kids painting a mural and had all kinds of fun games and things like that. Mm-hmm. So that was really fun. And then the Northside Mosaic is kind of this interdisciplinary, kind of public art project in which we're basically combining oral history, photo documentary, and other kinds of visual art, and essentially we're figuring out ways to kind of creatively install it and turn it into an exhibition, and then to kind of disseminate the work into different locations across the neighborhood and maybe even turn it into some murals and some other public art pieces. But essentially it's art with the intent of understanding, capturing, and celebrating the life and the people, cultures within the neighborhood, and bringing a lot of those things to the forefront of people's attention, which so often in a place like this, people tend to focus on the negatives, and people internally see something like diversity maybe sometimes as a negative because of the what are oftentimes ethnic tensions and things like that. But maybe to kind of help people to rethink the nature of the condition of our neighborhood, maybe start getting people to start thinking about it more positively, and also mm-hmm. call to light maybe some of the things we need to change. And, that's Northside Mosaic. Yeah. And then, we're right now starting this Northside Asset Development Initiative, and there's already some pieces underway. But essentially, the Northside Asset Development Initiative is a collaborative project which entails three components. And one is workforce development, two is business development, and three is social enterprise. So essentially, it's like job training. On the one hand, it's we're providing services and kind of tactics and strategies for local businesses to help support themselves and develop and sustain themselves. And then we're right now in the process of developing a business plan to turn our former auditorium into what would become a viable theater and event space. And in through that, our intent is to train and employ local residents. And that's pretty much a thumbnail sketch of what that project's about, mm-hmm. but it's something that's going to take a while to develop. We hope that it's got pretty much it's up and running by the fall. But there's already some things going. I mean, we're already providing some consulting services to local business through our partners. Mm-hmm. So through Lemoyne and through the Small Business Development Center and through a number of other organizations, as well as the Syracuse Cooperative Federal Credit Union. We're providing services to local businesses. We have a GED program, and we're about to start doing some computer and resume programs for local residents. And like I said, we're starting this business plan for the theater.
Great. But you didn't mention the community garden.
Oh, the Vietnamese Freedom Garden. Yeah, that was something that started.
that's something that started prior to us getting there, but we've kind of taken the lead on helping develop it, and that is we're turning what was formerly the site of a crack house into now a kind of a cultural, you know, kind of convening place for the Vietnamese community, and there'll be some installations in there that represent their culture. There'll be places for them to gather, and you know, there'll be a lot of foliage and nice mm-hmm. things that'll make it a very pleasant little place to be.
So the building was knocked down.
Yeah, building was knocked down, turned into grass space. We were able to secure some federal funding to redevelop the space, and we've already gone through the design. SUNY ESF helped with the design, mm-hmm. and then now this spring we'll be starting phase one of the garden. So we'll be kind of creating a plaza and some putting in plants and doing some kind of public art installation for great. The Vietnamese culture. So
great.
Yeah.
Well, thanks.
Thank you.
It's been really helpful. A lot of this, of course, I knew, but. Yeah.